final result, which I derived on the last lecture, yeah, it's a slope formula for correlation function of the CMB fluctuation. So, what was it? Okay. It's by definition was expectation value of the temperature fluctuations which are measured in the direction LR on the sky multiplied by temperature fluctuation in the direction L2 on the sky. And then what we do, we keep angle between these two directions to be fixed. And what we do in experiment, we are just averaging over the whole sky. When we were deriving this formula, we were averaging over the position of the observer. So for the high multipoles, it's the same if everything is homogeneous, isotropic, and we have Gaussian field. So here, cosinus theta is L1 scalar product multiplied by L2. So and then we express this correlation function, which we observe today, in terms of the spectrum at the moment of recombination. And this spectrum was characterized by the gravitational potential, by the spectrum of the gravitational potential at recombination, plus fluctuation of the energy density of radiation. And the formula would be written like this one. So it was sum over multipole from L equal 0, of course you could write, but I think monopole component is irrelevant. So I will write here from L equal 2. Yeah, because only quadrupole doesn't depend on the motion of the observer here. Till infinity, then 2L plus 1. Then CL multiplied by PL, that this is the Jupper polynomial, which depends on cosinus theta and on multiple L. And of course, I recall you that the angular size and multiple are related by this formula. So large multiple correspond to small angular distance between two directions. And for the coefficient of CL, which are analog of Fourier transform, but on the sphere, we have the following formula. CL is equal to 2 divided by pi, and then integral, and here comes the spectrum at the moment of recombination. So phi k, Fourier component of the gravitational potential, plus delta k, delta, the fluctuation of the energy density of radiation divided by 4. Then this thing should be taken at the moment of recombination. And then there was spherical Bessel function of the order L, which depends on k at 0. At 0 is conformal time, which corresponds to the present moment of time. Minus Doppler term, so it's derivative of the fluctuation of the energy density of radiation divided by 4k. And this thing is proportional to the velocity field of the radiation, yeah, derivative. Therefore, this term is called Doppler contribution. And in fact, as we will see, this term contributes just a little bit, less than 10%. Therefore, in fact, when people call these peaks Doppler peak, it's not completely correct name, yeah, because they are not related with the motion of the plasma, but they are related with the modulation in the spectra of the density fluctuations. Then dGL k at 0 divided by dk at 0, not divided, differentiated over the argument, then it was squared k squared dk. And now what we have to do, we have to calculate these integrals given source function, which I also calculated in the previous section, lecture, at the beginning of the previous lecture, for different scales, yeah? Now, as I told you, L multiplied by L plus 1 Cl is the typical amplitude of the temperature fluctuations in the envelope scales P divided by L. So first, let's consider large envelope scales, because we can naturally expect in this case that the main contribution to the fluctuation of the temperature in the sky comes from long wave perturbations, which didn't evolve practically after inflation. So the spectra was preserved, there was no transformation of the spectra. And in this case, we could simplify the formulas just cutting all large k or small scales. And then we can expect that the integral, which we will calculate as substituted spectra in the region of large angular scales, will give us good approximation. Of course, it will be not perfect, because as you see from this formula, all scale k contribute in the fluctuation of the temperature as a given multiple. But the largest contribution comes from the scales, linear scales, which have on today's sky appropriate angular scale. You see? So, first, let's do it with, okay, let's do anisotropy on large angular scale. Large angular scales. Large angular scales means that theta is much larger than 1 degree, or as you will see, this formula in fact will be valid for L smaller than 30. 100 is already not good approximation, because a lot of contribution also comes from the small linear scales where the spectra was transformed. Now, here the main fluctuations are due to the perturbation with k at a recombination much smaller than 1. So it means this contribution comes from the perturbation which at the moment of recombination has the scale larger than the horizon scale at this time. Then we know that if the scale larger than the horizon scale, perturbation practically didn't evolve. And what we have there? We have there, for instance, for the fluctuation of the radiation, the following formula. At the moment of recombination, it would be for adiabatic perturbation, as I told you, 4/3, the fluctuations in the matter component is for adiabatic perturbation. And cold matter component, in fact, at this time, generate practically the full gravitational potential because the contribution of radiation is not so large. And also it's dissolved a little bit, but it's little bit there. And then on the scale larger than the horizon, we know that this thing is equal minus 2 phi. Correct? It's as usual. Therefore, delta k is minus 8/3 phi k taken at the moment of recombination. Also, as I explained you before, that this phi k at the moment of recombination is different from phi k generated on inflation and immediately after inflation by the coefficient 9 to 10. So it's not actually a big deal. Now, also, this gravitational potential in the dust-dominated universe is constant on both scales practically. Therefore, delta prime is equal to 0 in this formula. You see, so this term doesn't contribute. And the source term, phi plus delta over 4, is nothing more from here when we will substitute than just 1/3 of the gravitational potential. You see? So in principle now you could recalculate, or you could convert back from Fourier space to the physical space, and then you would get the following formula. I mean, not in this formula, but previous formula which I wrote in terms of the direction of the sky when I still didn't make actually this expansion in terms of spherical harmonic. Yeah, I use formula for Sachs-Wolfe effect. So fluctuation of the temperature today in our position in direction L of the sky Okay, when we will use this result in the previous formula, but doesn't matter, would be given by 1/3 of the gravitational potential at the moment of recombination at the point from which photon arrives to us. You see, so why I wrote this formula? Because you could see this formula in all the books that on large angular scale fluctuation of the temperature in the given direction is nothing more than just the value, 1/3 of the value of the gravitational potential in the place where the photon decoupled and arrived to us. Now, what kind of spectra we are getting in this case? What we have to do, we have just now take this expression in terms of phi k and substitute in this formula. How we could do it? Let's consider particular spectrum which is close to the spectrum generated on inflation, but not completely like this one. Let's forget about logarithmic dependence of the spectra, and let's assume that the spectra is flat. So, we will assume that the spectra which is generated on inflation is like this one, where B is constant. In reality, as I told you here, there is small logarithmic dependence, but you understand that this logarithmic dependence is not so relevant to large scales, and also for my calculation. So I will assume that this combination is constant. Then, after that, I substituted here, okay, or 1/3 phi k multiplied by k cube, and then what I will get? I will get integrals constant multiplied by Bessel, spherical Bessel function squared multiplied by k in some power. These integrals you could find in Grashstein-Rishek, yeah? And then the result which you will get in this case for LL plus 1 multiplied by CL looks like follows. It's 9 B divided by 100 pi. Or 10 pi, 100, I guess 100. Yeah, it's 100 pi. So it's constant. So what would you expect for the spectra in the large angular scale or for small multiples? L plus 1 CL as a function of L. For the multiples smaller than 30, you expect that your spectra should be perfectly flat. Of course, you see on the graphs which people usually present, the spectra behaves like this one, yeah? And here it's raising. But this kind of things, deformation, comes because we use here imperfect approximation, since we have to take integral over the whole spectrum of the k, and then part of the modes, okay, which correspond to small linear scale, contribute to L, which is large enough. But this is really very good approximation for the multiple smaller than 30. Now, next task, but as I also explained last time, that this multiple is about 30, they give us good result, but precision is not good enough. Why? Because here cosmic variance is very large. As I told you already, in within horizon scale, we have only 2L plus 1 representative of multiple L. And therefore, statistical variation of delta CL over CL is of the order of 12 plus 1 minus 1 half. So as you understand, because we don't have enough representative, we cannot collect the whole statistic. And for instance, if you would take quadruple L equal 2, then you understand that this variation, because of this kind of because of insufficient number of the multiples within horizons, this variation is about 50% here. And for multiple about 20, it's 15% still. So here, you cannot expect to get very good accuracy or very good precision. Therefore, if you want to get very good precision from the fluctuations of CMB, you have to go in the larger L or smaller angular scales. And on smaller angular scale, in principle, you have already spectra or evolution of the spectra. After inflation, it was deformed quite substantially, right? This is for the cost primordial information about spectra which is generated on inflation. But this spectra is deformed in a very tricky way, and this deformation depends on the other cosmological parameters. Therefore, when you will measure here spectra with high precision, you will determine not only parameters of the spectra immediately after inflation, but also metacomposition of the universe. So now let's do next step, and let's go to small angular scale, and let's look how the spectra will look like there. And I will consider now range of multiple larger than 150. So you will apologize me for this missing range, because here neither of the approximation is working very well. But this is not so substantial, because we will be interested mostly actually in the Doppler peaks here. I will be calling them Doppler peaks in spite of the fact that they are not Doppler, okay? Now, small angular scales. Small angular scales. So I will consider theta much smaller than 1 for L larger than 150. Here formulas work very well already. Here perturbation, so here the main contribution to the fluctuation of the temperature comes from inhomogeneities with the wave number which satisfy this condition. As I told, this perturbation already evolved, so the spectrum was deformed and became much more complicated than it was, I mean, compared to the original spectrum. Yeah.
What says this number 150?
It's multiple. It's angular scale, yeah, it's related with angular scale by this formula where it was.
Well, I guess the question is, Why this number for your approximation?
Because it's about first Doppler peak. In the region of the first Doppler peak, where spectrum begins to oscillate, or where perturbation, roughly speaking, which acts as horizon, make one oscillation. And therefore, you will get there something like sine or cosine, which will be efficient already, and you could use several point approximation, as you will see, to calculate integral step. So, first of all, okay, what we will do with this horrible integral? Because really horrible with this spherical basic function, if you will substitute arbitrary functions here, then there is no way to make it. Even on computer, I told you, it's extremely difficult to do. You see, because if you would take just normal maple, okay, put it there, you will get disaster. Therefore, you have to have special program which deals with this maple. Or you have to find good approximation for these spherical Bessel functions. And good approximation looks very simple for spherical Bessel function if you use the advantage of large values of the multiples. So, first task which we will do, we will simplify GL, which depends on K at a zero, for L much larger than 1. And then you could find, I don't know in which book, but some book of special functions. The good approximation here is the following. The g squared L as a function of k at 0, yeah, is equal to 0 approximately for k at 0 much smaller than L. So for large values, for small values of the argument, when the argument is smaller than the index of this function, it's practically zero. Or zero oscillate perhaps too fast, I don't remember already. And GL squared at k at zero is equal 1 divided by the argument k at zero, k at zero squared multiplied by L minus L squared, square root of this expression. So here you could recognize Bessel function, how it's decayed, yeah? Normally, because Bessel function normally is something like sinus or cosinus, and then it's expanded, it's spherical Bessel function. And here multiplied by cosine squared of the argument, k at 0, plus some kind of shift factor here in the argument also. So k at the zero perhaps something like this one.
So this is just semi-classical.
Yeah, this is, you could see that this is semi-classical approximation. And this is for the values of the argument, which are much larger than the order of basic function. And then you understand that when you substitute this expression here, then the integrals becomes much more simple. And in particular, I could write that CL is equal to 1 divided by 16 pi, then integral from L at 0, because you see k equal for k smaller than L divided by at 0 minus 1. L at 0 minus 1, perhaps, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for k smaller than L at minus 0, the argument here should be skipped. It should be equal to 0. And till infinity, so I integrate till over dk, then here I have 4 pi, 4 phi, plus delta squared, k squared, divided by k at 0, and here square root of k at 0 squared, minus L squared. Plus, okay, here I do not write expression, term which is proportional delta prime. This term, you see, coefficient I do not write because of course, here I could substitute, or I can then differentiate this kind of transfer function. I can substitute things there, but this term gives 10% contribution, as I told. And let's concentrate mostly on this term, which contains most of the interesting information. So squared, and then here dk. But I don't know, I mentioned last time, yeah? I don't know, did you pay attention? Or you didn't pay attention that until now, I was cheating you a little bit because I was considering recombination as an instantaneous process. And for the perturbations, which are larger than the scale of the horizon, it's completely irrelevant because you understand that on these times, okay, nothing happens with this perturbation, nothing happens with the photons. So it means also that the fact that I treated recombination as instantaneous is not relevant for the fluctuation of the temperature on large ampoule scale. But when I consider small ampoule scale, the fact that recombination is not instantaneous becomes quite important. Why? As I told you already, okay, let's state that recombination started at z equal 1200 and was going till 900. And photons were decoupling in this layer, After that, they became completely free, so no scattering. But here, in principle, photons could escape from this region, or from the last scattering could happen at this moment of time, or at this moment of time. And when photon arrives to us, we do not know precisely from which place it came. Because with some probability, it could be scattered here last time, it could be scattered here, or it could be scattered here, right? So what does it mean, this thing? It means that we are getting, with the help of these photons, which are coming from different directions, only smeared information over some region of space, which correspond to this range of the redshift. And in fact, it leads to extra dissipation of the fluctuations in the scales which correspond to this interval of redshift or to the duration of recombination, okay, which would be written down like this one. Sigma is, in fact, duration or coefficient which characterizes the duration of recombination in conformal time, okay, in terms of the moment of recombination. So then you understand that the appropriate scales should be smeared. And, okay, calculation of this effect is a little bit long, okay, takes 3 pages in my book, but the result is extremely simple. This kind of non-instantaneous recombination induces here factor like exponent minus 2 sigma k Это A squared. You see? So it's extra suppression which comes from this finite thickness effect. It's not silk dissipation. Silk dissipation I will show you in this transfer function once more. But this kind of extra suppression comes from finite thickness effect. It should be distinguished, and it's related with the fact that we do not know in which place the photon which arrived to us was last scattered precisely. Yeah? So this sigma could be calculated, and it's about, I guess, 10 minus 2. It depends, but only slightly, it depends on the parameters of the model. On the number of neutrinos, etc., etc., etc. So, there is analytical treatment of recombination, which actually allows us to find out this thing, to calculate precisely analytically. Now, what we have to do? Now, it's clear that we have to take 4 phi plus delta, delta is the fluctuation of the energy density of radiation, in the scales smaller than the horizon scale at the moment of recombination, substituted here and calculate the integral. What we found for delta after recombination, not after recombination, after inflation, at the moment of recombination as a result of the evolution after inflation. I will recall you the expression which we found. I think I was deriving this expression, yeah, 1.5 hours in the previous lecture, so perhaps you still remember it, or maybe you forgot it already. So to this expression, I am just taking gravitational potential. And then what I am getting, I have the following things. 4 phi plus delta at the moment of recombination was equal 4. No, 4x, because I multiply it by 4. Then Tp, I will concretize this function a little bit later, 1 minus 1 divided by 3 Cs squared. So there was no this term 1, okay, the expression which I gave you, solving this equation for delta A as in WKB approximation. But this 1 comes from 4 phi, because source function is not just delta A, but it's 4 phi plus delta A. Then there was plus t zero square root of cs, and then there was cosine from integral k cs d eta multiplied by exponent minus k divided by kkd squared, and then phi 0 k. So phi 0 k was spectrum immediately after inflation. So it's primordial spectra, and in small scales it's modified by this so-called transfer function. Why? Because perturbation which entered horizon, they started to evolve, they became sound waves in the baryon radiation plasma, as you could see from here. But this sound wave in the baryon radiation plasma, they move in the field which is created by cold matter, okay, in the gravitational potential which is created by cold matter. Therefore, there is this shift. Yeah.
So why was it very wrong to interpret this finite thickness effect as silk damping in the time interval delta et al? Because it's the same analytical dependence on k like silk.
Yeah, but look, here, silk comes here, but it doesn't come here, you see? And also, silk damping here comes extra during this delayed recombination. So this scale also grows a little bit. But silk damping is the disappearance of perturbation. And here, this finite thickness is just uncertainty from where the photon arrives. You see, it's not real dissipation.
When calculating the Silverman scale, you also have to solve for an integral over eta. So
yeah.
Fixed integration.
Yeah. But there is a physically different effect, because here you are getting perturbation can, in principle, they could survive there in this scale. But nevertheless, a fluctuation of the temperature will be smeared because photons, okay, which are coming from different places are mixed. So even in the presence of perturbation in some scale, they would disappear, I mean, in the pattern of the temperature fluctuations. Because the pattern of the temperature fluctuations you are getting by the mixture of all these photons, which were like scattered, okay, yeah, within this interval. You see? And silk damping, it just diminishes in homogeneity there. And therefore, this inhomogeneity doesn't contribute to the fluctuation of the temperature. This is the reason why it's important to disaggregate. Because when I was talking to these guys who are doing this thing professionally, they were always giving me philosophical answers on the questions. Silk damping and finite thickness effect is the same or not? Okay, they were saying that in some sense it's the same, in the other sense it's different. So I could never understand what do they mean. But it's in fact two different physical effects. You have to distinguish them because, okay, you consider just limiting case. When there is no silk damping, there is still fluctuation of the temperature, but because you do not know from which place photon precisely came, or the photons actually which are coming in this direction, coming from different places, then they are mixed and then they smear temperature fluctuation in spite of the fact that there is homogeneity in the density of the radiation. Now, as I told, this coefficient, yeah? So spectra is given after inflation. Then this coefficient could be calculated analytically only in two limiting cases. For the perturbation, which crossed the horizon much before equality, and for the perturbation which crossed the horizon much later after equality. And they look like following. If I would take this TP, then TP is really very simple. So for the perturbation which crossed horizon late after equality, for the long wave fluctuation, nothing happens with this thing. So the coefficient here is 10 over 9, this coefficient. But when the perturbation enters horizon, or if it entered horizon before equality, then, of course, most of the gravitational potential is due to the radiation. Radiation and baryon is baryon radiation plasma. In baryon radiation plasma, you have sound waves. The amplitude of sound wave is dropping. And therefore, if very early perturbation entered, for instance, horizon, very, very early, much before equality, then the gravitational potential just will dump because the amplitude of sound wave is going down. They are oscillated, but okay, if you would use, for instance, adiabatic invariant, about if you would take into account that the number, occupation number for the found sound wave is concerned, then you will see that the amplitude should go down during expansion. Therefore, here for the perturbation which entered horizon very early, gravitational potential just has to disappear. And there is transition region here, okay, where function goes like this one. Here it's k at equality. You see k at equality corresponds to the wave numbers of scales which enter horizon at the moment of equality. And in this transition region, the function in logarithmic scales, okay, can be approximated as a linear function. So here, t in this region, tp, could be written as logarithm of k at equality. You see? Maybe some coefficient. And this kind of region, or this region could be, the function in this region could be derived only numerically. And for instance, in the case of zero baryon density, and this is good approximation for this purpose, it was obtained in the paper by Bond, White, I guess, there is a paper. Where people refer to which collected incredible number of references only because analytical fit which they found there. Which looks, by the way, horrible. And this analytical fit in this limited range is enough to calculate the first three Doppler peaks. Because by some kind of mystery, first three Doppler peak comes not here, but precisely on this region for the concordance model, where you cannot do anything analytically, but nevertheless, you can make simple numerics and then fit these numerics with this linear function. Now, this function characterizes the amplitude of sound wave in terms of original gravitational potential after this sound wave begins to oscillate, after perturbation entered horizon. Here also things could be calculated analytically, T O, and here also everything depends crucially on the moment of time when perturbation entered horizon. If perturbation entered horizon very early, so it means short wavelengths or large k, then the amplitude for the same initial condition, the amplitude of sound wave will be 5 times larger than the amplitude for the sound wave which will be generated in the case of perturbation entered horizon after equality. You see, so function became like this one. So it's like this one, and then again, here it's about 1.96. This number can be calculated again analytically, and this number is 0.4. And this range goes from k eta equal 1 till k eta about 10. You see, so this race by factor 5 is not instantaneous. It takes some time. And the first three Doppler peak comes precisely here. Here also this function, the result of numerical calculation, can be approximated by logarithmic function of k at equality. You see? So how to understand why perturbation which entered horizon earlier have amplitude 5 times more for the same initial conditions than the perturbation which entered horizon already at the moment when radiation was negligible? Because perturbation which entered horizon very earlier, okay, were boosted somehow by the radiation which at this moment of time was creating most of the gravitational potential, you see? And this is the reason why there appears this factor 5. And here, eta equality, of course, depends on the amount of cold matter at present universe. And if you still remember, or if you don't remember, I will recall you that eta equality is inversely proportional of square root of omega m, where omega m is the total density of baryons plus cold dark matter multiplied by h squared, where h is Hubble constant normalized from 75 kilometers per second of omega parsec. You see? So, therefore, you see that in principle, in these ranges, which are responsible, as we will find, for first three Doppler peak, the dependence on the omega m, on the amount of cold matter, comes logarithmically. And this is perhaps the most important place where the dependence of the spectra on the amount of cold dark matter, is coming. And when Weinberg was doing calculation, for instance, analytical calculation, he just, he didn't pay attention that there is this kind of difference in the amplitude of sound wave, which will be generated by given gravitational potential independence when it comes inside the horizon. After that, in a year, he discovered this coefficient 5. He told me, I told him about it was in my paper, this 5. Oh, it's nice to somebody who knows about this 5. But you know that I can tell again that when I was asking the guy who was doing numerics, okay, at the beginning they had no idea about this 5, but then some of them, I don't want to concretize Faust also, is the note that there is something like this 1. But this is quite important effect because it's really, I mean, this kind of, this curve, okay, just really contains all the information about the amount of cold matter in our universe, I mean, in the spectral feature of the spectra which we will calculate. Now what we will do, we see that this transfer function depends on various parameters, yeah? For instance, because which parameters we have? Omega m, omega variables. These are most important parameters given the total energy or the total omega in our universe. So where omega baryon comes? Omega m, as I told you already, comes here and comes here. More importantly, comes here. Where omega baryons come? If we would have no baryons, what would have we here for this coefficient? If there would be no baryons at all, then S squared would be equal 1/3. And this thing would vanish, right? So there would be no constant shift in this source function. And what is this in terms of baryons? If you can recall, okay, CS squared for baryon radiation plasma was given by expression y divided by 3. 1 plus 4/3 epsilon baryon divided by epsilon gamma. Yeah, you remember this formula. So you see that here, this coefficient is simply proportional to the amount of baryons. When the amount of baryons is equal to zero, then this coefficient is equal to zero. And, okay, epsilon b is proportional to omega baryon h squared. Therefore, this coefficient for the constant part, the non-oscillating part, is simply proportional to omega baryon h squared. And it's linear in omega baryon h squared. So dependence here, linear in omega baryon, and it's logarithmic in omega a. Therefore, you understand that the spectra should be extremely sensitive to the amount of omega baryon, more sensitive than to the amount of omega cold matter. Right now, where omega baryons come else? Comes else in an important way. It comes also, of course, here. And here, as you understand, this cosine should determine you the location of Dr. Pix. And we will see how it happens. Yeah?
Can I ask a speed of sound, does it depend at all when we have a sort of relative abundance of helium and
yeah, it depends. It depends on. No, it doesn't depend on the relative abundance of helium if helium is in coupled to the radiation. And it's coupled before helium recombination.
Helium recombines
earlier. Yeah, you are right, absolutely right. Because helium recombines earlier, it influences the speed of sound, yeah? And the speed of sound, of course, should be calculated precisely in numerical codes is taken into account of earlier helium recombination, because helium drops from this matter, and then the sound becomes not so heavy, it increases a little bit. And of course, it has effect on the location of Dr. Pix, because the location of Dr. Pix, okay, so from zero to beta recombination, is determined by the period, okay, which you have here.
So you can turn it around and try to extract.
Yeah, you can, but sensitivity is not so high there, still in location of the peaks. You see, because here the location of the peaks, and by the way, not just location of the peaks, but also here, actually, the things are extremely sensitive to all these things. But you see, it's already high order effect. Also, the amount of neutrino, the number of neutrino influence, for instance, the precise form of this curve. Why? Because if you have too much neutrino or gravity wave, you see any ultra-relativistic component, then it influences the moment of equality. And the moment of equality, as you see, quite important for this transfer function. You understand? So all parameters come in the game, and they come in a tricky way. But right now, let me concentrate mostly on omega baryon and omega m. You see? Now what you will do? You just take this function, square it, and then substitute in this, where was this? Integral. Yeah. Then, when you will take this function and square it, what kind of expression you will get? Yeah. Let me just write structure, not just complete expression. It will be the waste of time if I will write complete expression. So, also you will find it. Yeah, all these things. So, square. What kind of structure it has? First of all, you have this constant part, which you square, okay, and it will be still constant part. Or constant, I say, non-oscillating part. There is no sine, cosine here. And this non-oscillating part, okay, I will denote by this function m. It depends on omega b h squared, and it depends also on logarithm omega m h squared. And depends linearly, it's proportional to omega baryon, yeah? So when omega baryon is equal to zero, then this function is equal to zero. Then, after that, when you square this thing, there will be term which will be product of this non-oscillating term with cosine. So, next term will look like this one. It will be coefficient A, yeah? So, coefficient A, which again depends on omega B H squared, because if this term would be equal to zero, then there would be no product of constant with cosine. Then depends on logarithm omega M H squared, multiplied by cosine K integral Cs dn. You see? Plus, you take this thing squared. And what you will get? Cosine squared of the same argument. And what is cosine squared of the same argument? It's cosine of something with double argument, right? So, therefore, next term will be some coefficient b, which, by the way, now doesn't depend linearly on omega b, and depends on omega b only here, very weakly. Therefore, let me skip here in the dependence of the coefficient, dependence on omega baryon, and let me leave only omega m h squared. Yeah? And multiply by cosine, double argument, cs dn. You see? Ну, plus constant, which I will shift here. So, you got nice expression for this transfer function. It's a part which is nearly constant, no, not constant, but non-oscillating, plus two terms, okay, which are oscillating, which have periods which are twice different. So, if you have two cosine with twice different periods, and when you superimpose them on each other, what you will get? You will get interference, constructive interference, okay? For the first peak, second, third peak, fifth peak, and you will get destructive interference for the second, fourth, and third peak. As a result of this shift. So you could guess already that you could get here something what looks like CNB. But now, of course, it's still source function. You have to take it and substitute it in this integral, and have to take into account this term. And then you will get three terms, three integrals, which will not contain sine, cosine, yeah? They could be calculated in terms of hypergeometric function, etc., etc. They are most difficult, so I found some numerical fit for them. And you will get two integrals with cosine divided by these numbers. And this integral can be calculated analytically with excellent accuracy when you use saddle-point approximation for this integral. How to do saddle-point approximation, you could think yourself. Yeah? And as a result, what you will get? You will get that after integration, okay, it's simple, after integration, k integral cs d eta will be replaced by L multiplied by rho, and where rho is 1 divided by f is 0 integral Cs d eta. So what is this? Cs d eta is so-called conformal scale of the perturbation at the moment of recombination, and eta 0 is the distance till the scale. So this is nothing more than just relative angle which appropriate horizon, how it's called, covers on the sky, today's sky. So it should be about 1 degree. And here is L. You see, and therefore, for CL, you will get the following formula, final formula. You see, I write just the structure formula. I mean, to what you have to pay attention that you will look at this precise expression. But all precise expressions, okay, are written in my papers or in books, so it doesn't. So then for CL, you are going the following expression. So N, now I will write this coefficient like this one, multiplied by exponent minus L squared, divided by L squared dissipation. So this factor, exponential factor, comes because of two effects, because of finite thickness effect and because of silk damping, and it means simply that on small scale, all the perturbation will be washed out because of the viscosity, and therefore they do not contribute anything to the fluctuation of the temperature. So this term has no oscillating factor, and this coefficient depends on omega baryon h squared, about what I told you before, because it comes from this first term as a result of integration. It depends logarithmically on omega m h squared. So this is so-called non-oscillating contribution. And if I would draw it, okay, here L plus 1 Cl on this graph, then this contribution, and here L, 200, yeah, this contribution will look like some mountain, okay, which goes like this one. And here exponential decay is because of silk damping and finite thickness effects. You see? Now, and there is contribution which comes from sine and cosine. And this contribution is like this one. Now I will write coefficient. This is A, 1. So they are different from A there. Some transfer thing. Where A1 also depends on linearly on omega B and H squared, on omega B H squared, and logarithmically on omega cold matter. Cold dark matter, you could see. Multiplied by cosine L rho plus P over 4. P over 4 comes when I calculate the integral using single point approximation. So it shifted cosine a little. And then exponent also minus L squared divided by dissipation scale squared, where the thing actually is a combination of finite thickness plus thick damping effect. Plus coefficient A2, which depends only on logarithm M H squared, but not on omega B, multiplied by cosine of 2L rho plus P over 4, multiplied by exponent also L over L D squared. You see, so here you have, as a dependence on the L, yeah, you have here double argument. And this rho is the typical scale which corresponds to the horizon scale in terms of multiples, rho minus 1, in fact, at the moment of recombination. Because rho was given by this expression, Cs d eta, so size of horizon divided by distance to horizon, so angle, roughly speaking. And now these two terms, what they will give you? Forget about shift, okay, for a minute. So if Kasai, and this coefficient also actually they drop inversely proportional to 1 over square root of L, but this is a little bit table already, yeah? So one Kasai looks like this one here. And the other cosine looks like this one. You see? So how it is? Yeah, so you see? So it has twice larger period. So here in the first maximum, these two cosine are added to each other. So interference is constructive. Here in the region, okay? Here in the region where how it's called, this thing has minimum, this thing has maximum, they annihilate each other. They try to annihilate each other. Then remember that one cosine is proportional to omega b h squared. Yeah. So you understand that when you increase omega b, the things will go up like crazy here. And the other cosine. It depends only logarithmically on omega m h squared. So here, okay, cosine you could do the same, yeah? So, no, I think I did something wrong. So here is destructive interference. Here is constructive interference. Yeah, so region of second peak, as we expect, will be destructive interference. Now, if you would take the sum of two cosines, superimpose it on this hill, then what will you get? You will get, of course, what we expect. So you will get here the things like this one, and here you would get like this one. You see? So this kind of curve you are getting as a result of imposing of sum of two cosine with the arguments which are twice different on the hill. And then actually how the slope of the hill goes, etc., etc., depends on many parameters. And sometimes even here you cannot reveal second peak because of the steepness of the hill, you can produce the second upper peak again. This actually for some range of parameters which was never investigated by this guy who are doing CMB fast slope because you have to have very large deviation from the Carpenter's model. But amazing things that for large variable density you could make these things really very steep. And then because of this steepness you can produce peak as a place where there should be no peak. But it's already a little detail. I just tell you how this thing could be useful because, okay, when I discovered this kind of curve, this unknown range of parameters, these guys were extremely surprised that the thing could survive. Now, okay, we know the dependence on the parameters. And we could investigate and we could think how this curve will be changing when we will be varying cosmological parameters. The curve takes this form for the standard values of the cosmological parameters when omega m total is about 0.26, I guess, and omega baryon is 0.04, 4% of baryon. Now, let's think what will happen when we will be changing these parameters. First of all, what happens with this height when I increase the density of baryons. So what are the cases? Goes up, because you see here, we have linear dependence on the baryon, and of course, this term is dominated, product of this term is the other term. So when omega baryon goes up, then, okay, hill goes up like crazy, correct? When omega m goes up, what happens? Look at this curve. When omega m goes up, it means that eta equality goes down, right? So k eta will be smaller. when omega can at equality, when omega m is increasing. So you are shifting here. And if you are shifting here, then the amplitude T0 drops. And if amplitude T0 drops, when omega m grows, then what does it mean, this thing? It means that the increase of omega m should try to put things down. Correct? So, omega, the increase of omega m h square, acts on this peak in the opposite direction. Therefore, you could, in principle, try to increase simultaneously omega baryon and omega m, and still keep the height of the peak to be in the same place. So there is degeneracy. Given the first Doppler peak, the height of the first Doppler peak, and for concordance model, its height is about 6 times higher than the amplitude here for very low multiples, yeah? So you could keep height of the first Doppler peak just changing both parameters simultaneously. So there is degeneracy, but you know, dependence on omega b here is crazy, it's linear. But dependence on omega m is only logarithmic. Therefore, of course, you could have this degeneracy, but within reasonable range. You see? And if, for instance, you would make omega baryon h squared, omega baryon, like 20%, 0.2, then the peak would increase here so much that there would be no way to compensate its increase or put it down with the help of increase of omega m. In this case, you would need to take omega m much larger than 1. This is impossible, as you understand, right? Therefore, from the height of the first Doppler peak, from the observation, you could, irrespective of anything, conclude immediately that omega m h squared in our universe is smaller than 20%, 0.2. It's irrespective of any other features. You see? Baryons. Yeah, baryons. Yeah, you're right. So you know already that from baryon, in any way, you cannot make our universe. There is no way or any expense to make universe entirely from baryons. Now, good. You could ask where the first Doppler peak is located. And you understand that the first Doppler peak should be located at the place L1, which is of the order of 1 divided by rho, right? From here, roughly speaking. Now, what is rho? Rho, as I told you already, 1 divided by eta 0 and integral Cs d eta. Cs depends on omega baryon. Eta 0, the age of the universe, depends on omega m. So you see that from this expression that the location of the first Doppler peak should depend not only on the total curvature of the space, but also on omega baryon and omega m. So, of course, at this point, you can stand up and tell me that, guys, you cheated us when you told that I can measure the curvature of the universe just by location of the first Doppler peak, because first Doppler peak, in fact, its location depends on omega baryon and omega m. You see? Good. So did I cheat you or I didn't cheat you? I didn't cheat you completely, of course. But nevertheless, I can tell you that this dependence, first guess which you could make, perhaps this dependence is not so relevant. No, it's very relevant, because if I would increase the amount of baryons in the universe by factor 2, from 4% to 8%, then the first Doppler peak would move on the right on delta L of the order of 40. You see, so 40 is quite substantial. If I would increase omega m by factor 2, for instance, from 25 to 50%, then I would move, because of this factor, the peak on the left, also by 40, around concordance model. So you see, in total, I could increase the amount of barium by factor 2, decrease the amount of cold matter by factor 2, or increase the amount of cold matter by factor 2, and I can move this peak, decrease here, yeah, on 80 on the right side. Instead of 200, it will come to 300. And then there is my omega total, which allows me to measure the total energy density of the universe. There is no in this case. But you see, if you fix the height of the first Doppler peak, if you fix it, then you can change these two parameters, omega m and omega b, only simultaneously. And you see, for the given height of the first Doppler peak, when you increase omega barium by factor 2, you have to increase also the amount of omega m, if you want not shift the height of the first Doppler peak. Omega barium, okay, during this procedure, moves peak on the right, but omega m returns it back. You see? So it's a tricky thing. Fixing the height of the Doppler peak, the location, its location, becomes practically independent on the other parameters. And this is the reason why, for instance, just finding the location of the first Doppler peak, you could determine the whole curvature of the universe, or the total omega m in our universe. But it's tricky thing. When you say that you could determine our universe is closed, open, or flat from the location of the first Doppler peak, when you say like this one, it will be wrong. You could determine it from location and height of the first Doppler peak. You see? Good point. Now, and also, by the way, what I want to stress, you just change parameters here a little bit, and then you destroy curve immediately. It's not so stable, by the way. It's very unstable. Now, how increase of omega b and omega m act on the second Doppler peak? You see, remember that here in the region of first Doppler peak, there was constructive interference of two cosines. In the region of second Doppler peak, it was destructive. Therefore, on the second Doppler peak, the increase of omega b and omega m act in the same way. They both try to kill first, second Doppler peak. Omega m h squared. You see here they act in different opposite direction. Here, because of the destructive interference, they act in the same direction. Now, from the height of first Doppler peak, I already got this bound on the amount of barium. So it cannot be more than 20%. Now, if second Doppler peak exists, what could I say about the amount of barium? You see, barium try to kill second Doppler peak linearly, very fast. So I will find that for any reasonable number of parameters, if omega barium h squared is larger than 0.7, then second Doppler peak will be killed immediately. You see, therefore, from the fact of existence of second Doppler peak, I can conclude that omega barium h squared is smaller than 0.07. So, you see, now it's already improvement of the bound on the amount of barium is factor 3, which follows from the existence of second Doppler peak. Now, I know from observation that omega barium h squared is larger than 0.03, for sure, yeah? Because we see some barions around. And it means that barions already contributed in the killing of second Doppler peak. And if I would start to increase omega m, then second Doppler peak will be again annihilated. Yeah? So, when I would kill second Doppler peak, when the amount of barium is like this one? I would kill second Doppler peak if omega m h squared is larger than 0.3. So, from the existence of second Doppler peak, under this prior For variables, it follows that the amount of cold matter in the universe can be in no way larger than 30%. You see? Now, combine the location of first Dr. Deep with its type, which gives you that omega total is equal to 1, and take into account now these bounds. What you will get? You will get that you have to get for something somewhere else, some matter. And where can you get it? Only for the expense of the matter which was irrelevant in past. And what kind of matter was completely irrelevant in past? Only cosmological constant. Therefore, from this curve, from the location, height of the first Doppler peak, and from the fact of existence of second Doppler peak, you can robustly say that there should be dark energy in the universe. And this kind of conclusion is much more robust than conclusion which you draw from observation of supernova, because in supernova you have systematics. Here systematics is under control. You see? So this is really great thing. Actually, we should be appreciated how much this skill gives us. And in particular, it just proves that there should be dark energy. Some people try to avoid the existence of dark energy because they were taken, you see. It's actually limits on the combination of these two things, you see. And if it's limits on the combination of these two things, you can make some kind of stupid thing. As usual, you could take H, for instance, something like 0.01, if you are completely crazy, yeah, and then get omega m larger than 1. Yeah? So, and then some people took for the Hubble constant something like 38 or 30 kilometers over second over megaparsec, and then they tried to increase omega m by such experiment. But you understand that Hubble constant, 30 kilometers over megaparsec over second, you can discuss only, I don't know where, okay, I don't know what to say, where you could speak about this kind of value for Hubble constant, because Hubble constant today is measured with reasonable accuracy. And also, it measured with reasonable accuracy from the observation of this curve. Everything what I showed you until now, okay, in all formulas, I was writing dependence on omega m h squared, omega b h squared. But if you would take into account some tricky things, okay, for relation, for the contribution of cosmological constant, in the relation between angular scale and linear scale, then this kind of degeneracy, which we have here normally, is somehow disappears. And there appears in one place, the dependence on omega m h squared in power 0.16, something like this one. No, here. I forgot already. But doesn't matter. In one place, this degeneracy disappears, but it's very weakly disappearing of the degeneracy. And therefore, measuring, and it characterizes the location of the peaks. And therefore, measuring, for instance, the location of the first three peaks with accuracy 1%, you could determine Hubble constant from CMB observation with the accuracy about 7-10%. And in fact, people actually found from, again, CMB curves that Hubble constant should be 71 plus minus, and I think they a little bit exaggerated with the accuracy there. But, okay, plus minus 3, plus minus 5, I would say for sure. You see? Now, if you would measure all these points with unbelievable accuracy, with very good accuracy, which people measure right now, then of course you could find, okay, all kind of, you could increase the accuracy of the determination of the parameters. And in particular, what people did in WMAP 3. After WMAP 1 results, okay, they measured, of course, omega B, omega M with good accuracy. But for the spectral index of scalar perturbations, they have result 0.99 plus minus 0.04. It's after 1 year of WMAP measurement. But of course, in abstract to their only theoretical paper number 13, they wrote not this result, they wrote something crazy. They wrote that there is spectral index of the order of one, and there is the running of this spectral index, okay, which was incredibly large and wouldn't fit any inflationary model besides of some crazy model like hybrid inflation, okay, with crazy potential. And of course, after that, they declared that inflation is in trouble. I don't know, you heard about this result or not. The other statement which they made on the press conference in Washington, Bennett made this statement, I guess, yeah, he said that lambda 5-4 series are excluded by WMAP observation. I wouldn't even care that they are excluded. Who cares? Also, I am sure that neither of these series, F squared, phi squared, lambda 5-4, phi 10, okay, have nothing to do with reality, yeah? So as I told you already, everything what you can say, not about scalar field potential, but about equation of state from this observation. Also, of course, was wrong result. And you know that experimentalists have nice feature, yeah, which makes us safe. If theory predicts something, then experimentalist always thinks that it's very good to rule out this prediction. So they are fighting not for confirming prediction, usually for ruling it out. But after they tried to rule out this prediction, they came to other people, of course, and they 1 month all kind of, how it's called, all kind of sensations were clarified. First of all, it was clearly stated that radius spectral index has nothing to do with CMB fluctuations. They got this result because they took CMB data, they took Lyman Alpha Forest data, which are astrophysical data, with very big systematics, and then try to please both guys, good guy and bad guy. And as a result, they got disaster. So what we can learn from here, what kind of strategies they would need to follow? Okay, instead of pleasing good guys and bad guys, they needed to use good guy to learn something about bad guy. Namely, they needed to use CMB data to learn something about systematics in Lyman Alpha Forest. You see? Observations. And in fact, all these data were collected. Right now, there is no any evidence for the running spectral index. And adding this one extra parameter doesn't improve anything practically. Therefore, they write about this thing because they wrote something already in the first paper. But after 3 years data, the result here on spectral index will improve tremendously. Why, by the way, you need the further observations? Okay, who cares? Do we have in our universe 4.01 or 4.001 amount of baryons? Nobody cares, right? I also don't care. Or accuracy for omega m, or even dark energy, yeah? It doesn't tell us about new physics. So why we have to improve the data and what we are running for? You see, one of the things, of course, for which people would run to find better, with better precision omega here. Because, for instance, some people, like Lenny Saskin, have some kind of models, a quote-unquote models, which predict open, slightly open universe. But forget about it. Okay, here I think the things also are established. Here, to invest money in the location of first Doppler peak is the same thing as to invest money in verification of violation of CPT invariance. Who would be this crazy guy who would give money for this kind of experiment? Yeah? Nobody, perhaps. But there is one thing, actually, which guys needed still to verify, and which still has to be verified, namely spectral index. Because as I discussed in the previous lectures, inflation doesn't predict precisely flat spectra. Inflation predicts deviation of the flat spectra from the flat spectra, okay, and this thing should be larger than 0.03. So spectral index, okay, which we expect is not good, because actually otherwise you could think that it can be red tilted. Yeah, so let me write like this one. So NS for sure should be smaller than 0.97, but larger than 0.92. But here, if you want, you can write 93. log bound is not so important. And this is nothing more than logarithmic running of the spectrum. And this kind of deviation of spectral index from the flat spectrum has physical origin. Namely, this deviation is related with the graceful exit from inflation. Therefore, you have to detect it. And 3 years ago, there was some meeting in Stockholm, Nobel Symposium. Not in Stockholm, yeah. You were there, or not, Stefan? No. And then there was pool 3 years ago, it was 2003. Okay? What is more important to do? To find deviation omega from n equal 1? From 1 or deviation of spectral index from n equal 1. Of course, everybody besides of me voted for omega equal 1. I don't know why people interest. Okay, but Lionel Page, who was there, okay, fortunately, he's smart guy, so he doesn't pay attention to what democracy tells us. Yeah? So, after that, they started to see carefully how to find these deviations. And at the beginning, he was telling us that in WMAP it will be practically impossible. But WMAP 3 result revealed that because they were able to measure better optical depths, yeah, revealed that NS is equal 0.95 plus 0.2, I guess, and minus 0.15. So at the level of 2.5 sigma, you could say WMAP 3 already discovered this deviation of spectral index from n equal 1. And it's an impressive thing, because, for instance, Steve Weinberg, okay, some time ago was giving talk and was telling that inflation predicts flat spectrum, but flat spectrum we have everywhere. For instance, I was giving talk in Optical Society, and people told me what is unusual about it. But I think people in Optical Society would never guess that the spectrum should be logarithmically running. And this is as important as running of coupling concept in electrodynamic theory. Not electrodynamic, yeah, but in strong interaction theory. You see? So here I asked Lyman how much he would bet on this arrow box, because with experiments you never know what does it mean sigma, in terms of his own money, not in terms of his graph, of course, because when it goes about own money, the people are much more serious. Yeah. So in 2 months, okay, because he was busy, maybe he was calculating how much he has. So he wrote that he could bet many thousands of dollars. For comparison, I can tell you that Hawking bet against Stoff $100 that his result is correct. And Stoff was claiming that Hawking made mistake by factor 2 in his temperature. And I think nobody paid to each other, because Stoff after that invented some complicated double space quantum mechanics, God knows what, yeah. So you understand that people pay about $100 even, but here, okay, it goes about $1,000. And this thing, of course, will be improved much more after several more years of WMAP flight, and also comes as the next Planck experiment, Planck satellite. So accuracy here will increase by a few times. Now, what is the next task we should be accomplished still with CNV fluctuations? Okay, about this task I will tell you after 20 minutes break. It's about polarization of CNV. Okay, thank you.